Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:37 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is January 5th. Well, we've had a lot of volatility in markets today, so perhaps we should start off and just look at that VIX index, because it is bouncing, and this is coming from the lower side of the range, and we've definitely had a sequence of higher highs since June of this year. So there is the potential, at least, that we're in for at least a bounce back towards the 25 level, and then potentially more than that, because the five-year yield continues to march higher. And I remember this almost feels like a rerun of the kinds of things I was talking about at the beginning of 2021, because back then, I was particularly concerned about the rise in the cost of servicing the national debt. We'd had a really impressive breakout in the five-year. It had been ranging with a rounding characteristic below 50 basis points and then broke out right at the beginning of January and doubled. And that was going to have, well, it did have a material effect on the cost of servicing the debt, but then it didn't really do anything for most of the rest of the year. And in that time, stock markets continued to advance. There wasn't any problem with liquidity. Now, of course, the next question is, what's different this time? Well, the yield at 1.43% is almost 50% higher than it was at the peak in the first quarter of 2021. It has completely unwound the big breakdown that we saw at the beginning of the pandemic. And the quantity of debt outstanding has increased by about a quarter since then. But the more important point is that we're still trending higher. And this is a big breakout. And ultimately, it's going to increase the cost of funding for everyone. So that's putting particular pressure on the kinds of companies that are most acutely dependent on access to free liquidity in vast quantities. So obviously that is a particular focus for the SPAC sector, because their valuations are almost entirely driven by the willingness of investors to commit capital to speculative ventures with an open window as to when they can actually get their money back. And when interest rates are zero and money is floating around everywhere, well, then that's a lot easier. But when interest rates start to rise, well, obviously that business model comes under pressure, and it has been trending downwards since February of last year. Now we can also just simply look at the IPO sector, and the IPO ETF is breaking downwards. So this is also indicative of the kinds of companies that have come to market in the not-so-distant past, and now their business models are being tested with the raising of interest rates. But what I find interesting right now is that the high-yield sector is reasonably well contained. Whoops. So when we think about the high-yield ETF, it's rolling over, and it's pulling back from the region of the 200-day moving average. But it's certainly not the biggest downward dynamic we've seen. And when we look at these high-yield spreads, well, they're still reasonably well contained. Now, a good part of the reason for that is a lot of companies took the opportunity of extremely tight spreads and massive availability of liquidity in the second half of 2020 and into 2021 to refinance. So they don't have the same refunding commitments or necessity in 2022 that they might have had in 2020 or 2021. So they've pushed out the maturity waterfall to perhaps 2025. So that's a good part of the reason why high yield spreads remain reasonably well contained, but we can be sure that this spread is going to pop on the upside tomorrow when it's updated. Now, when we then think about the wider stock market, the Nasdaq remains susceptible to additional unwinding of its short-term overbought condition relative to the trend mean, and it's down about 400 points. And we definitely have some rotation underway, and this is particularly evident in the underperformance of companies like Amazon, which was down another $44 today. It's testing the region of the 200-day moving average. And of course, the problem with these kinds of broadening patterns is that historically they are not the best predictor of future positive returns, except in the case of companies like Amazon, which have a history of going sideways for 2 years at a time. So investors have been through this experience before, and they've been conditioned to expect that once you sit through a lengthy hiatus, you'll be rewarded with a big breakout and potentially a doubling of the price. And of course, we've seen that at least twice in the last 5 years. And there have been plenty of times when Amazon just went sideways. But when it does break out, then we do get these significant advances. So investors have enjoyed doubles at least 3 times in the last decade after these long ranges. And of course, that's why people are buying it today. But of course, this is a topic of conversation that I explore at the chart seminar, but it is the application of Heisenberg's uncertainty principle to markets. Because the greater the knowledge within the crowd of the trend characteristics that are driving prices, the less likely it is that those exact same characteristics are going to be predictive of the future. And it's generally speaking when people express hubris and they believe that there's an inevitability that the trend will be repeated, then that's when there's the greatest risk of a drawdown. So it's incredibly important that Amazon continue to bounce and hold the lows that have been put in since March of last year. And it's now pulling back through the moving average, and it's looking tired. And we have the failed upside breaks. We've had lots of examples of failed upside breaks over the course of the last 6 months. So it looks like a completing type 2 top formation. But the defining characteristic isn't the failed upside breaks or the lengthening range, but rather the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So certainly, there's risk in companies like this. And then, of course, we have the fact that Apple achieved a $3 trillion valuation on Monday, and it's now pulling back from that level. The semiconductors index was able to recoup most of the decline by the close yesterday, and then that was about as good as it could achieve, and it started to pull back again in here today. So we have a preponderance of failed upside breaks within this little range, and we have a downside key, an outside day, another outside day. This was looking like a downside key yesterday, but we're getting follow-through on the downside today anyway. And we have these whopping downward dynamics in companies that have been leading the charge for the semiconductors, like Nvidia. So we get the big pullback last year, and then another big pullback this week. And AMD, which had also been one of the stalwarts within the index, has pulled back in a very dynamic manner twice. And this is negative trading activity following an acceleration. So there's clearly potential here that we're going to see additional reversions towards the mean and potentially more. Whereas in the more defensive sector, Kimberly-Clark has been going sideways for 6 years and has now broken out to a new recovery high. McDonald's continues to trend higher. So we're definitely seeing more demand for defensive type companies. And then we have BHP, which has rebounded and is trading back above the 2000p level in the UK. And this looks like a first step above what is effectively an almost decade-long range. And we're pausing in the region of the all-time peaks. Now, copper was really quite firm yesterday, and it was a little weaker in here today. And gold had been quite firm all the way through today and then gave up that advance in the last hour. So, still pausing here around the 1800 level. If we zoom in and just look at the last year of trading, there have been two occasions when gold was able to push through the $1,850 area, and both of those occasions failed. So it's now becoming a really quite easy pattern to analyze because we will have clear evidence of a return to demand dominance when it has sustained a move above the $1,850 area. And the price hasn't really gone anywhere for a year. And of course, with rising interest rates, then that will be something that investors will be alert to. But what it also means is that with rising yields and inflationary pressures that are high, well, then the negative real interest rate should be contracting. And that's classically been something that gold depends on. So that might be the reason why prices are a little bit weaker in here today. And gold shares, having rebounded over the Christmas period, were also a little softer in here today, but it also continues to look like a lengthy first step above the base. So we're in a more volatile environment, and there's clear evidence of rotation going on, but most particularly, it's highly defensive. It's the dividend paying portion of the tech sector, particularly companies like Intel, which are attracting interest right now. Not necessarily because Intel it has suddenly become the go-to company, but rather that investors were probably using it as a pairs trade short relative to longs in some of the more high-flying companies. So we're getting unwinding of short positions now, and also people will be picking up the dividends. And dividends become more attractive as bond yields rise. So its dividend-paying companies are becoming more attractive, and that's certainly helping the dividend aristocrats to continue to trend higher. Now, the index was a little softer in here today, but it's still in the region of the trend mean, and there's a reasonably lengthy range underneath it. So we don't have nearly as wide an overextension, and we might get some consolidation, but it's certainly offering a lot of clear outperformance at present. And then we have Brent crude, which was finishing out the day north of $80. Now, it didn't quite hold all of the advance, and it's also pushed through the $80 twice in the last few years, and they've both failed. But it does look somewhat better supported on this occasion than it did back in 2018, and there's the potential here that it could pop on the upside because producers are worried about the demand profile. And that's not generally something that oil producers have really ever had to worry about. But they have to worry about it during the pandemic because they don't know what lockdowns are going to be introduced around the world. So they don't know what the demand growth outlook is going to be like. So they're unwilling to make the kinds of financial commitments necessary to sustain these big moves on the upside. So these are, I think, important points here. And we're in a more volatile environment. There's definitely more defensive activity going on. Now, one thing that we should bear in mind is that when defensives turn to outperformance after a long period of underperformance in the latter stages of a big bull market, that's generally when we're in the final stage of an economic advance. And rising yields are a threat. So we've only just begun to see defensives outperforming. We've only just begun to see value outperforming growth. If that trend becomes more developed and persistent, then it's going to be something that we do need to monitor, and it would be particularly relevant for the consistency of the wider market. And it's incredibly important to see exactly where these yields are going to peak. Are we, in fact, going to see inflation peak in the first half of 2022? I believe that that's the most likely scenario. I also think that the supply chain problems that were such a well-understood factor in 2021 will be less of an issue in 2022. But I also think that inflation is going to peak and then trough at a higher level. So instead of seeing inflation trend below 2% for the foreseeable future, I think it's likely to trend above the 3% level for the foreseeable future. So inflation could halve from current levels and still be well above where it was before the pandemic. We've had a massive number of people resign, and a lot of them are taking early retirement. They're not coming back to the workforce. That's going to put upward pressure on wages and higher wages, and that also means more spending. And more spending means greater demand and greater pricing power. And those are the kinds of things that contribute to inflation over the medium to longer term. Doesn't mean that we get all the inflation right away, and that we'll get surprises in inflation over the course of the next decade. And how trends form is you get a big breakout, and then you get a pullback, and then the pullback holds the move at the breakout point. And I think that that's what we can anticipate from inflation this year. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.